black leather pumps. I could only afford to buy one of them, and I kept looking between the two pairs, trying to make up my mind. I sat there for over an hour, unable to decide which of the two shoes might make Nate love me again. Finally, the salesman approached me. There was something familiar about him, although I couldn't quite place it at first. Of course, he was the sort of man any woman would notice. As handsome as Nate, but in a different way. Broad and strong, whereas Nate is thinner and lankier. He stood over me and said in a heartbreakingly gentle voice, "We're closing in a few minutes. Can I ring you up?" It was all too much for me. I burst into tears. Jay closed the store, and we talked for the next 2 hours. I didn't tell him everything, but I told him enough. He told me he didn't understand how it was possible that my husband didn't find me attractive. I assumed he was just being nice, until he kissed me. There is something ironic about the fact that I have fallen head over heels for a shoe salesman. Jay's phone starts ringing, and he reaches to retrieve it from the pocket of his khaki slacks, now crumpled on the storeroom floor. He sucks in a breath when he sees the name on the screen. He glances at me before taking the call. Even though the phone is close to his ear, I can hear the female voice on the other line, but I can't make out what she's saying.
"I'm sorry," Jay mumbles into the phone. "I got stuck at work again doing inventory."
He doesn't want me to hear him lying to another woman, but it's unavoidable. I turn my head at least to give him some semblance of privacy.
"I'll be home in about half an hour."
He rubs at his messy hair.
"The traffic should be light, so yeah, don't worry about dinner. I'll just grab some pizza next door."
If Jay and I are both getting pizza, I'll have to go into the restaurant after he does. He's paranoid like that. He doesn't want his lies to be found out. And the truth is, neither do I.
"Yeah," he says into the phone. "I will. Yeah, sure. I'll do it when I get home."
He hesitates, glancing over at me.
"Love you too."
When he hangs up, his neck is bright red.
"Shit, I'm sorry about that, Eve."
"Don't be," I said, even though that call is a bitter reminder of yet another reason why we can never be together. Some of the post-sex euphoria dissipates in the wake of that phone call. It's funny that in all the months Jay and I have been sneaking around, I've never once been interrupted by a call or even a text message from Nate. He seems glad to have me out of the house. Jay chews on the lower corner of his lip.
"Next week?"
"Absolutely. It's the best part of my week. I would never miss it." As the two of us get dressed among the boxes of shoes in every single size, I can't help but think about how much this means to me. It's not just the best part of my week. It's everything to me. There isn't a day that goes by when I don't wish Jay and I could run off together. But in my heart, I know this will all end horribly. Chapter 18. Addie. As today's meeting of reflections is coming to a close, Mr. Bennett crooks a finger at me.
"Addie, can I talk to you for a minute?"
I've been going to meetings of the poetry magazine for a few weeks now, and I'm finally starting to feel like I'm part of something. Lotus sometimes waits for me after the meeting is over, and we walk to our bikes together, although I'm still not sure if she likes me or not. Sometimes I think she despises me and would murder me in my sleep if she had the option, but other times she seems to be happily tolerating me. In any case, I wave to her to go on without me, although I can see in her eyes she's curious about what he wants to discuss with me. Lotus absolutely idolizes Mr. Bennett. I hang back in the classroom while Mr. Bennett shuffles through some papers on his desk. He waits until everyone is gone, before he lowers the papers and smiles up at me.
"Addie," he says, "guess what?"
I love the way Mr. Bennett's eyes crinkle when he smiles. In the month I have been in his class, I have noticed he has two kinds of smiles. There's one he uses in class when he's trying to encourage students, but it's not as genuine. When his eyes crinkle,
That's when I can tell he's actually happy. Good news, I ask.
So there's a statewide poetry competition.
He rubs his palms together.
And every year, I have the opportunity to submit one poem from all my classes. And this year, I want to submit your poem.
My mouth falls open. Mr. Bennett teaches multiple English classes. And on top of that, he's got all the kids from the magazine to choose from. Lotus, for example, is an incredibly talented poet. All her poems are better than any one of mine. Has he lost his mind? Does he think I'm Lotus somehow? Mine? I finally squeak. He beams at me.
Yes. I want to submit He Was There. I think it's brilliant. One of the most moving things I've ever read.
That's the piece about my father. I'm having a serious choked-up moment. I've learned to get used to his praise, but not this much praise. It might be too much. Like I might explode from the amount of approval I'm receiving right now. Like when a starving person suddenly gets a bunch of food and then they die from it. Are you sure? I say.
Addie.
He folds his arms across his chest. At some point after the last bell rang, he undid the cuffs of his sleeves and rolled the sleeves of his dress shirt up to his forearms. Now I can see the dark hairs on his arm. None of the boys in my class have that much hair on their arms. Hudson had just a little, and it's pale blonde like the hair on his head.
Addie, you have to believe in yourself a little bit, because I sure do.
Yeah, I mumble.
Your poem is amazing.
His brown eyes hold my gaze.
You are amazing, okay? You are a master of this craft, even at 16.
If anyone else said it to me, I would think they were being patronizing. But somehow, when Mr. Bennett tells me I'm amazing, I actually feel that way. Like maybe there is something out there that I'm good at, even though being a poet would be a stupid and ridiculous career for me, and I really should become a nurse like my mother says I should. I'm not amazing at math, I blurt out. I feel dumb for having said that, but for some reason it makes Mr. Bennett laugh. He throws his head back and gives a great big belly laugh. I can make out a tiny silver filling in one of his back teeth.
Is my wife giving you a hard time?
I lift one shoulder. It's not her fault. I suck at math.
I know how she is. She's strict, isn't she?
I press my lips together, reluctant to say anything negative about his wife. But the truth is, while Mr. Bennett is one of the most popular teachers in the school, only the best math students are fans of Mrs. Bennett. She is really strict, and she doesn't have much patience for kids who don't get the material right away. But the worst thing people say about her is they don't get why Mr. Bennett married her. He's the hottest and most beloved teacher in the school. Mrs. Bennett is pretty, I guess, although not on the same level as her husband. And she's definitely not beloved. In fact, she's actually kind of a... Well, she's a bitch. There, I said it.
My wife is very concrete, he says. She's only interested in logic and reasoning. She isn't a dreamer like we are. For her, words only serve a utilitarian purpose.
It's fine, I reassure him. I just need to study. And also pray for a miracle.
If she's ever too hard on you, he says, let me know. Seriously.
I will seriously never let him know.
I completely understand,
he adds.
I was also terrible in math when I was in high school, and biology.
Really? He has zeroed in on my two least favorite subjects. He grins at me, and his eyes crinkle in that way I have come to love.
Oh, yes. I refused to dissect a frog because I thought it was wrong. The teacher was going to fail me. So I had to do an extra credit project just to scrape by.
I didn't think it was possible to like Mr. Bennett any more than I already do, but there it is. Anyway, he looks down at his watch and seems surprised by the time. I apologize. I didn't realize it was so late. Sorry to keep you. Do you need a ride home?
I'm so shocked by his offer. I almost dropped my backpack. Is he for real offering me a ride home? Doesn't he know what happened to Mr. Tuttle? There is no way I'm taking a ride from another teacher who actually makes an effort to care about me. I'm not letting anything like that ever happen again. That's okay, I say quickly. I have my bike.
Are you sure? It's no trouble.
Positive, he shrugs.
Okay, well, I'll see you tomorrow then.
He seems so unconcerned. It almost makes me wonder if I overreacted somehow. After all, a ride is just a ride. Other kids do occasionally get rides from teachers, and the teachers don't end up fired and disgraced. Maybe I made too much of the whole thing. It seems too late to change my mind, though, so I grab my backpack and head out of the room and almost run smack into Lotus. She's leaning against the wall, her bag propped up against her Doc Martens, a slightly manic expression on her face. Hey, I say. I told you not to wait for me. She rubs her nose with the back of her hand.
Bro, what was that about?
Oh, I have to suppress a smile. There's some statewide contest he wants to enter one of my poems into. So, you know.
Wait, she sucks in a breath. The Massachusetts Poetry Contest?
Maybe.
Lotus swears under her breath. That's bullshit, you know.
I don't know. What do you mean?
I mean, she grits her teeth. Lotus has a lot of small, sharp-looking teeth. That poetry contest is a big deal, and he only gets to submit one poem from the whole school.
Yes, and like, you're just a beginner. Her heavily mascaraed eyelashes flutter. I mean, you're good for a beginner, but there are at least three other kids at the magazine who are better than you. And I am a senior, and he has never picked one of my poems.
I don't know what to say. It wasn't like it was my decision.
Yes, but it was a bad decision.
Her eyes narrow at me. You should tell him it's a bad decision. He shouldn't pick you just because you're the teacher's pet.
I already suggested to Mr. Bennett that there might be better poems out there, but he insisted.
What do you want me to do, Lotus?
I want you to go back in that room and tell him that he should pick somebody else's poem to submit.
I don't know what is more shocking. The fact that Mr. Bennett told me he was choosing my poem in the first place, or what Lotus has just asked me to do.
I'm not doing that, I say. She folds her arms across her flat chest.
So you want our school to lose?
I don't want us to lose, but Mr. Bennett picked my poem for a reason. He must think it's capable of winning.
She sneers at me. Oh, you really think that's why he picked your poem?
My mouth falls open.
Yes. I mean, it's not enough you got Mr. Tuttle fired. Now you have to go after Mr. Bennett?
My face burns. I had thought maybe Lotus and I were friends, but I was sorely mistaken.
I have to go home, I mumble. I'll see you next week, Mary.
As I walk away from Lotus, clutching the straps of my backpack, my thoughts won't stop racing. I hate that she called me out on all my darkest fears. Mr. Bennett had a lot of poems to choose from. Why did he choose mine? Objectively, I don't think my poem was the best one. There were so many other amazing choices, including the ones Lotus wrote. So why me? Is it possible she could be right? Is it possible that Mr. Bennett had some sort of ulterior motive in picking an inferior poem to enter in the contest? Was this nothing more than favoritism on his part? Or something even more than favoritism? The worst part of all, though, is the shiver of excitement that goes through me at the possibility that Lotus could be right.
Chapter 19 Eve. Today is my birthday. I'm turning 30, which feels like a milestone of sorts, although my life hasn't changed much in the last 8 years or so since I started teaching at Kasem High.
It feels like time has moved so quickly. In the blink of an eye, it was my first day as a teacher, and now I'm coming up on nearly a decade. My 20s are over. In another blink of an eye, I'll be 40, and my 30s will be gone too. Then one day, I'll be lying on this bed, 90 years old, and wondering where my whole life went. I stare into the closet, trying to decide what footwear I want to wear for my birthday. I'll be working, so I can't wear sandals, not that I would in the middle of October. I scan the rows of shoes that line the bottom of the closet, then I hesitate. Nate is still in the bathroom, shaving. He'll be there for at least a few more minutes. I take the opportunity to reach for the large suitcase stuffed into the side of the closet. I heave it out, and with one more quick glance at the bathroom door, I undo the zipper. I let out a sigh when I look down at the contents. There are dozens of shoes in that luggage. Nate doesn't know about this particular stash. He thinks the number of shoes I have at the bottom of the closet is bad enough. He's already monitoring the credit card bill for shoe purchases and has hinted that he thinks I have a problem. If he knew about this luggage, he might have me committed. Which means I don't have much time. I get out my favorite pair of Louis Vuitton pumps. Well, I only have one pair of Louis Vuittons because they cost a small fortune. They're made from black patent calf leather with sleek lines and a stiletto heel. Nate never would have approved of me buying them, so I saved up the cash until I had enough. I keep them hidden away and only wear them on special occasions. I quickly slide the pumps onto my feet. Then I stuff the luggage back into the closet just as Nate emerges from the bathroom with his face clean shaven. He's got a white towel cinched around his waist, and even though he is not quite as muscular as Jay, he is incredibly handsome. Despite everything, I am still intensely attracted to my husband. The only problem is he doesn't seem to feel the same way. I'm wearing only a bra and pantyhose, and I take the opportunity to walk over to him in my Louis Vuitton pumps. With those shoes adding inches to my height and him in his bare feet, I am much closer to his height. I tilt my face up to his, and he pecks me on the lips. I run a finger down his chest. How about a little birthday present? He stiffens.
Now?
Sure, just a quickie.
Eve,
he rolls his eyes.
You can't possibly be serious.
Right. Why would I be stupid enough to think my husband would want to have sex with me on my birthday? As always, when he rejects me, I get that pang of shame in my chest. At least there's a man out there who wants me. Maybe it's not me. It's him. Maybe he's asexual. Isn't that a thing? Of course, he sure didn't act asexual when we were first dating. He couldn't get enough of me back then. Nate notices the look on my face and quickly adds,
I just took a shower, and we have to be at school soon. Anyway, I'm taking you out to dinner tonight.
He hasn't mentioned any sort of present, and I'm beginning to think there isn't one. A few years ago, Nate said something about how presents didn't make sense when we're sharing the same money. Sure enough, he has not bought me a present in the last 3 years. I suppose dinner is my present.
We're going to have a great time tonight.
He places his hands on my shoulders and grants me a second kiss, pressing his lips firmly against mine, but not making any attempt to slip me some tongue.
Wherever you want to go.
Great, I say, and I think I do a good job of not saying it sarcastically. As Nate gets dressed, my phone lets out a buzz, signifying a text message. I snatch it off the table, noting that I have a message on SnapFlash. I downloaded that app about 4 months ago. I heard about the kids at school using it because it has the feature of text messages and images disappearing exactly 60 seconds after you open them. It's a perfect way for kids to communicate without their parents discovering what they are up to. It's also a great way to communicate with the attractive shoe salesman who I've been seeing for the last several months. I hold my breath as I open the app. I told Jay not to message me unless it was important, but I can't help but smile at the message from him.
Happy birthday. Wish we could spend it together.
I stare at the message for the 60 seconds until it disappears from the screen. My first smile since I woke up this morning spreads across my face. Even though it's dangerous for him to message me, it's always the best part of my day. I write back. So do I. I stare at the screen for another few seconds, and sure enough, another message appears. I've got something for you.
Eve?
I nearly drop my phone. Nate is dressed and looking at me curiously. I suppose that's fair enough, considering I'm still just wearing a bra and pantyhose. Yes, I say.
We have to get going.
He taps his watch.
You're going to be late.
I grab a dress out of my closet and throw it on as quickly as I can while Nate casts pointed looks at his watch. By the time I grab my phone again, the message from Jay has vanished, and there is nothing more on the screen. Chapter 20. Addie. For once, I have worked up a sweat in gym class. I've been running laps, which is my least favorite thing to do. We spent the entire class running, with the requirement of doing 50 laps. I'm almost entirely sure that Kenzie did half of that. But when she told Mrs. Kavanaugh she was done, the teacher just waved her to the bleachers to sit down. But when I tried to tell Mrs. Kavanaugh I was done after 48 laps, she shook her head at me and told me to keep running. So today, I'm grateful to take a shower after class is over. I can't believe I still have 3 periods left before I can go home. Except the worst part is that I can't even just veg out on my sofa for the rest of the evening. Mom has the day off, and she said when I get home, she wants us to visit the cemetery and see my dad. It's been 2 months since we've been there, she reminded me. As if he's lying in that grave looking at the calendar on his watch and wondering why it's been so long since we came by. Whatever. After I turn 18, I'm never visiting that grave ever again. I shower quickly. I've been trying to shave my legs more frequently so the girls won't have a reason to make fun of me. But at the same time, it seems kind of dumb to shave just for gym class, especially since they make fun of me whether my legs are baby smooth or not. Today, unfortunately, my legs are on the hairier side, so I try to be as quick as possible. I trudge back to my locker to retrieve my jeans and oversized sweatshirt. Except when I get there, the lock is hanging open. I rip the locker open, my stomach sinking. Right away, I see my backpack is still there, so that's good. And my gym shorts, underwear, and sweaty t-shirt are still lying on top of the backpack. But that's it. The clothes I came to school with are gone. That's when I noticed Kenzie and her friends at the other end of the hallway, watching me and giggling to each other. I square my shoulders and turn to look at them. Can you please give me back my clothes? Kenzie blinks her big blue eyes at me. She's already dressed and ready to take off to our next class.
What's wrong? You've got clothes in there. Wasn't that what you were wearing all day?
I grit my teeth.
No, it wasn't. Look, I need my clothing back, okay? I have an idea, she says. Why don't you write a poem about it? Isn't that what you're good at?
She taps one of her manicured fingers against her chin.
Woe is me. My clothes were let free. And now everyone will see my hairy knee.
Kenzie's friends burst out laughing and then head for the exit. For a moment, I am seized with the almost irrepressible urge to run after Kenzie, grab a handful of her blonde hair, and rip it right out of her skull.
I bet she'd stop laughing if I did that. And bonus, I'd probably be expelled.
Honestly, the only thing that keeps me from doing it is thinking about how disappointed Mr. Bennett would be. I look back at my locker, weighing my options. I really, really don't want to put on my sweaty gym clothes again. But what am I supposed to do? Go to class wearing a terry cloth towel? All the other students have already gone to their next class, and in a second, the next group will be filtering in. I decide to do a lap around the locker room, figuring that Kenzie likely would not have thrown my clothing away. I check every single aisle, but I don't see any signs of my jeans or sweatshirt.
It isn't until I get to the showers that I spot a little ball of clothing in the corner. I dart into the shower, and sure enough, it's my outfit from this morning, except now absolutely soaked from the shower. Well, my options have just gotten a little more limited. The next group of students are coming into the locker room. There's no way I can put on my sopping wet clothes, so I have no choice but to put my gym shorts and sweaty t-shirt back on. The t-shirt smells terrible, but what can I do? And the worst part of all? I've got Mrs. Bennett's math class next. The hallways are empty as I trudge up to the third floor for math class. The sweat on my t-shirt is not quite dry, and it feels uncomfortable on my skin. Also, I didn't know what to do with my sopping wet jeans and sweatshirt, so I stuffed them into my backpack, and now it weighs like 1,000 pounds. I can see from outside the door that Mrs. Bennett is already in the middle of her lesson. She's writing on the blackboard, and she turns to address the class. Ugh, this is going to be awful. I almost consider skipping, but she told us in no uncertain terms at the beginning of the semester that an unexcused absence would drop our grade by 10 points, which would make my grade minus 10 points. So I open the door to the classroom, sweaty t-shirt and gym shorts and all. Mrs. Bennett swivels her head to look at me. She does not look happy. I mean, she never looks happy, but even less than usual right now. She folds her hands across her chest and glares at me. She doesn't seem impressed by my gym clothes and hairy legs. "Nice of you to join us, Addie," she snips at me. "Sorry," I mumble. I drop into my seat as quietly as I possibly can. I expect Mrs. Bennett to go back to teaching the class, but instead, she is still staring at me with her hands across her chest. I don't know what she wants from me. Yes, I'm late, but there's nothing I can do about it now, unless she wants me to somehow turn back time. Does she want me to start flying around the earth backward until I can go back to 10 minutes earlier and be on time for her class? Is that what she expects from me? "Your homework, Addie," she says impatiently. Oh. I fish around in my bag until I find my homework assignment on a piece of loose leaf paper. But as I pull it out, I realize I have made a dire mistake. The paper was not in my binder, because I was working on it during lunch. And because I put my soaking wet clothes in the bag, the water has completely obliterated all the writing. It's totally illegible, but I have no choice but to hand it over. "Really, Addie?" Mrs. Bennett says as she looks down at my soggy homework assignment. "It got wet," I say lamely. "I can see that." She balls it up in her hand and tosses it into the trash. "Well, since I can't possibly grade this, why don't you give me another copy tomorrow?" It takes all my self-restraint not to groan out loud. It was enough torture doing the assignment the first time. Now I have to do it again? This time, on top of tonight's impossible homework as well? But what can I do? I can't afford to get an incomplete on the homework. I need every point I can get. "Yes, ma'am," I say. Mrs. Bennett shoots me a look. Then she goes back to teaching the lesson. I would say that she hates me more than anyone else, but truthfully, she doesn't seem fond of any of the students. She just seems like a miserable person. Honestly, I feel sorry for Mr. Bennett sometimes. Chapter 21 Eve. So far, my birthday has not been particularly wonderful. My husband outright refused my advances this morning. One of my stockings got a rip in it, and Addie Severson just referred to me as ma'am. The only good part of the day was that text message from Jay, and the present he has assured me I will receive. During my free period, I return a phone call from my parents. It's been ages since we talked. If I had to guess, I'd say we haven't had a phone call since Father's Day. We have become the sort of family that contacts each other on major holidays, and that's it. So I'd imagine the next time I talk to them after this will be on Christmas.
I can't remember the last time I've seen them. 3 years, I think.
Eve, Mom says when she picks up the phone. From the echo, it sounds like she is on speakerphone. Dad and I are calling to wish you happy birthday.
Thank you, I say stiffly.
Hello, Evie, my father speaks up. Happy birthday, honey.
Thank you. We are so awkward and polite around each other. I never would have thought we would be like this. I was always close to my family when I was younger. Are you doing anything special tonight? My mother asks.
Nate is taking me out to dinner.
How is Nate doing?
When my mother asks the question, I imagine her crinkling her face in disgust.
He's fine. Any news?
My mother wants to know if I'm pregnant.
It's not clear whether she wants me to be pregnant or not.
She'd like to have grandchildren, but with the way our relationship has been, who knows if she would ever see them? And I'm sure that she doesn't like the idea of me having children with Nate.
No news, I say.
Oh, she lets out a sigh. She's relieved.
Well, I'm glad you're doing well.
Do you think you might come out to New Jersey for Christmas?
Maybe.
We have visited Nate's family for the last 2 Christmases. Technically, it should be my parents' turn. But I'm not excited to see them and have them judge me.
I'll let you know.
The silence hangs between us. There are so many things left unsaid between me and my parents. But the biggest one of all is the thing I am most reluctant to say.
You were right. I should never have married him.
Chapter 22. Addie.
Oh my God, if I have to spend another minute in these stupid gym clothes, I'm going to throw myself out a window.
They aren't sweaty anymore, at least. But now that they have dried, they feel kind of crusty. And also, I smell. Even though I showered, my clothes smell bad, and people are scrunching up their noses at me. It wasn't bad enough that I was the girl who slept with Mr. Tuttle. Now I'm the smelly girl who slept with Mr. Tuttle. And my wet clothes are totally ruining my backpack and everything inside. Before I go to my last period, I make an effort to try to wring them out in the bathroom sink. It doesn't work, and I get water all over my t-shirt. I end up stuffing the clothes back in my bag, then racing to get to class before I'm late yet again. I arrive at Mr. Bennett's classroom seconds after the bell rings. He's just getting up from his desk to close the door to the classroom when I appear in the doorway. His brown eyes rake over me, and when they widen in shock, my mortification is complete. Mr. Bennett, my favorite teacher in the whole world, has now seen me in my smelly, dirty gym clothes with my legs unshaven. As awful as it was when Mrs. Bennett yelled at me in math class, this is way worse. I'm dying a little bit inside.
Addie? His brows bunch together. Are you okay?
Fine, I gulp. I just want to slide into my seat and disappear for the rest of class. Only 40 minutes left and this stupid day will be over.
Mr. Bennett rubs his chin, as if considering whether to accept my answer. Finally, he walks over to his desk, scribbles something on a piece of paper, and hands it to me.
Go home early,
he murmurs, low enough that the buzzing students behind us can't hear him.
Here's a note in case they give you any trouble.
What?
I blurt out.
You look like you're having a rough time,
he acknowledges.
So I'm giving you permission to skip this class. There won't be any homework tonight. Just relax.
But I can't quite wrap my head around this one. But at the same time, I don't want to stand here and argue with him. I do want to go home. I'm dirty and sweaty, and my temples are starting to throb. Okay. Thank you.
He winks at me.
No problem.
Every time Mr. Bennett winks at me, my heart flutters a little bit.
It makes me feel all the worse that he is looking at me in my disgusting gym clothes. In any case, I take the scribbled permission slip that he wrote and slide it into my pocket, but I won't need it. I take off early, hopping onto my bike and pedaling as fast as I can to get home so I can change. Except I don't quite make it home. I know where Kenzie Montgomery lives. There's a directory of all the students' addresses, and after I borrowed her house keys, I looked up her address. It's right on the way back to my own house, and I took the time to check out the location. There's no harm in looking. And today, I decide to take another look. Chapter 23. Addie. Of course, Kenzie's house is much larger than mine. It's practically a mansion. I'm pretty sure two or maybe even three of my houses could fit into Kenzie's. Even her lawn looks prettier than ours. Green and lush, even though everyone else's grass seems to be wilting as the fall goes on. Does she have fake grass on her lawn? Is that a thing? I hover by the walkway of her house, still on my bicycle. The windows of her house are dark. Her parents both have some high-powered jobs, like lawyers or CEOs. I've heard her bragging that they are never home, as she plans parties that only her exclusive guest list of friends are allowed to attend. Only the school's elite have been inside Kenzie's house. Hudson and I used to make fun of those parties. Now he's probably, like, the guest of honor. I pull off my backpack. I fish around in the small pocket until I pull out the house keys I've been carrying around since I swiped them from her bag. What I'm contemplating is risky. Kenzie's parents might not be home, but that doesn't mean they don't have some sort of elaborate alarm system. Or perhaps a pit bull will leap out at me the second I cross the threshold. That sounds like the kind of luck I usually have. No, it's not worth it. My life won't be better if I get mauled by a pit bull. Instead, I continue on my way home. When I get there, my mom is sitting on the sofa reading. She loves to read, which was something that drove my father wild.
You like spending time with your books more than you like spending time with me.
I don't think it was true, but if it was, could anyone blame her? Addie, she looks up when she sees me. And she sticks a bookmark inside her book. I always dog-ear pages, but she hates doing that. She treats her books so delicately. You're home early. Are you ready to go visit your dad? Somehow I almost forgot her plan to drive out to the cemetery today to visit that asshole's grave. This day just keeps getting worse and worse, especially when my mother stands up from the sofa, looks me up and down, and says, Did you seriously dress like that today at school? Yep, I say, because I just don't want to tell her the story about what happened to me. It was embarrassing enough to live it. I don't want to share it with anyone else, even my mom. She rolls her eyes. You can't dress like that at the cemetery. Why don't you go change your clothes? I dump my backpack on the floor. No, I'm not changing. Well, you're not going like that. Fine, then I won't go. Adeline, she exclaims. That's a terrible thing to say. I mean it. I tug at the hem of my sweaty gym t-shirt. He was always drunk and he hit you. He doesn't deserve for us to visit him. My father was terrible. For most of my childhood, he was drunk. Even though people made fun of Hudson for his dad, I would have taken his embarrassing father over mine in a heartbeat, Polish curses and all. My dad never even held down a job, even as a school janitor. Every time somebody gave him a chance, he would show up drunk for work and get fired. My mom supported us through my whole childhood. I was at Hudson's house studying when I got the call from my mother that they found my father at the bottom of the stairs, not breathing. And I didn't even feel the slightest bit sad. Addie, she says quietly, the lines under her face deepening. He was still your father.
I don't budge from my spot in the living room. I'm not going to change. Not for him. If she forces me, maybe I'll go. But once I turn 18, that will be the last time ever. Fine. Mom's shoulders sag. We don't have to go. I'm shocked. My mother is super stubborn, and I thought for sure we were going to be arguing about this for the next hour. I can't believe she just let it go like that. Really? Really. But please get changed. You smell terrible. Okay, she offers a smile. And let's go out to dinner tonight. We could both use a night out. I can't disagree with that sentiment. Chapter 24. Eve. For my birthday dinner, I put on my Louis Vuitton pumps and a red dress that clings to my body. I may not be the curviest woman in the world, but I've kept in good shape, and this dress accentuates my figure. Jay would appreciate it very much. But when I march into the living room where Nate is watching television, he barely looks at me. Ready to go? He asks. He hasn't changed out of the dress shirt and slacks he wore to work. But in his defense, he always looks incredibly handsome. I'm ready. I grab my purse from where I left it on the table next to the front door. I thought we could go to Maggiano's tonight. Nate looks at me like I just suggested we dash off to Italy to have dinner tonight. Maggiano's? That's kind of far away, isn't it? And pricey? It's my birthday, I start to point out, but I don't feel like arguing. And the truth is, I'm not excited to be sitting in a car with him for the next 45 minutes either. Fine. Do you want to go to Piazza? Piazza is a popular Italian restaurant about 10 minutes away from here. It's cheap and fast. Not exactly the kind of place I dream about going to on a special occasion. But I have a feeling nothing about this night is going to be anything special. May as well make the picture complete. Sure, he says. As always, Nate drives. He turns up the classical music station to a high enough volume that we don't need to speak to each other. When we first got married, I thought about what future birthdays would be like with this man. He was so affectionate. I used to think that even at 30 or 40 or even 80, we wouldn't be able to keep our hands off each other. I never imagined we would be driving to a birthday dinner at a cheap Italian restaurant, struggling to find something to say. We have some good talent this year on the poetry magazine, he says. Oh, that's great, I say, even though I literally could not possibly care less. Those raw emotions are so intense. Only a teenager could write something so utterly compelling. I nod. All those hormones. I can't even remember what it was like to feel everything so strongly. But I know I did. My husband is quiet then, lost in thought. He always seems like he's a million miles away these days. We have the same job, so it seems like it should be easy to come up with something to say to each other. Yet we can't. We have become strangers to each other. Maybe this is my fault. Maybe I need to try harder to connect with him. When we were first together, we used to sit in the park together, curled up under a tree, and he would read poetry to me. If he suggested such a thing now, I would roll my eyes at him. I liked the poems he wrote for me, because they came from his heart. But I never enjoyed poetry in general. It all seemed so silly. Especially the ones that don't even rhyme. I mean, I'm a math teacher. I would sooner sit in the park with him and solve quadratic equations. Maybe I should suggest it now. Maybe this weekend we can go to the park and share some poetry. And maybe I need to cool things down with Jay. As much as that tryst has meant to me, if I have any interest in saving my marriage, hooking up with another man is not the best way to go about it. I've decided, tomorrow, on the second day of my fourth decade of life, I'm going to make things right. I'm going to spend more time with Nate, and I'm going to tell Jay that it's over. When we get to Piazza,
Nate pulls into a spot at the end of the parking lot, as far as he can get from the restaurant. He does that all the time. There are plenty of parking spots right next to the door, and yet he parks half a mile away. "Can you park a little closer?" I say. He throws the car into park and frowns at me.
"What are you talking about? I'm already parked."
"Right, but there are other spots that are closer."
"You really want me to take my car out of the spot and then move to a different spot, like 10 feet away?"
"It's not 10 feet, and you're not wearing 4-inch heels." His eyes flicker down to my Louis Vuitton pumps.
"Well, who told you to wear those anyway?"
He narrows his eyes. "Are those new? They look expensive." "I've had them for ages. I wore them for my birthday last year." I can't help but think to myself that Jay would recognize these shoes.
"Yeah, right,"
he mutters under his breath. Nate climbs out of the car, and I hurry after him, although it's hard to keep up in these shoes. They are absolutely gorgeous, but nobody is going to argue that they're comfortable. What is that supposed to mean? He doesn't slow down to give me a chance to keep up.
"I mean, we'll see how new they are when we get the credit card bill, won't we?"
I want to tell him how unfair that is, but the truth is, the credit card will have a few surprises on it for him. I hate that he is the one who always pays it. It's this habit we got into years ago. When we got married, all our money was pooled together. I can't do anything or buy anything without him knowing about it. Me telling him that I want my own credit card and my own bank account might not be a step in the right direction for our marriage. Then again, he doesn't seem to care about these things as much as he used to. When I would go out without him, he used to ask me so many questions about where I was going and what I would be doing. And now it's like he doesn't care at all. He's just glad I'm out of the house. Nate at least holds the door open for me when we get to the restaurant. I've already decided I'm going to get the most decadent dessert on the menu. I deserve one treat today, considering the only present I've received the entire day from my birthday is a keychain from Shelby that she got in Cape Cod.
"Table for two," Nate tells the hostess.
She's a busty blonde in her 20s, and I'm glad to see at the very least he isn't staring at her breasts. "It's my birthday," I blurt out. I don't know why I said that. Nate looks slightly mortified, but I've only got a few hours left of this day, and I just want somebody to acknowledge that it's special for me. But it's not that gratifying when the hostess flashes me a quick smile, says happy birthday, and then leads us to the same crappy table we were going to get anyway. She doesn't take us to some special birthday table covered with streamers. Not that I was expecting anything like that. Just as we are settling into our seats, Nate stiffens. He's looking at something across the dining area, his brown eyes widening. "What's wrong?" I ask him. "What are you looking at?"
"What? Nothing."
He was definitely looking at something, although he doesn't want to tell me. Did he see one of the employees come out of the bathroom without washing his hands? Did he spot a pair of shoes that I purchased without his consent? "It's one of my students," he finally says.
"Addie Severson. She must be eating with her mother."
Now it's my turn to go as rigid as a board. "I didn't realize Addie was in your class."
"Yes, last period."
I don't know why the idea of Addie being in Nate's class makes me uneasy. I can't help but think of Art Tuttle's warning when we were at the supermarket.
"That girl is not well."
"She's really talented," he says.
"She could be a great poet someday."
That's not a very practical career. Nate's face falls. He looks hurt by my comment, but what does he expect? Being a poet is not a practical career aspiration.
"I just think it's something she might enjoy," he says. "She has a lyrical mind, and her favorite poet is also Poe, although she's partial to Annabel Lee."
One thing I do know about my husband is that his favorite poet is Edgar Allan Poe, and he loves The Raven.
If I were making a list of 5 important facts about Nathaniel Bennett, that would top the list. It occurs to me that we haven't even ordered dinner yet, and I'm already looking forward to being done with this meal. Listen, I say, you should be careful around Addie. You saw what happened with Art Tuttle. He was just trying to be nice to her, and look what happened. Nate's eyes darken.
If you think Art Tuttle isn't a creep, then you're blind.
I feel a flash of irritation at his comment. Art is not a creep. When I started working at the school, he was the first person to help me, and he never did or said anything inappropriate. He was just a good friend to me. And I knew he was tutoring Addie, and even saw them getting in his car together after school. But I truly never thought anything of it. Nobody did. That all changed when a neighbor saw Addie skulking around the back of Art's house and called the police. It doesn't look good for a middle-aged teacher when your 15-year-old student is found outside your house late at night. But in the end, nobody could prove any wrongdoing on his part. As silly as it sounds, the only thing Art was guilty of was caring too much. He knew Addie didn't have money for tutoring, so he was trying to help her through math class on his own. He gave her a ride home a few times because it was raining or snowing, and he didn't want her to have to bike home in inclement weather. And the dinners were about as innocent as it could get. He invited both Addie and her mother to dine with him and his wife. As for Addie being found outside his house, that was one Art couldn't quite explain. When he and I talked about it, he hung his head.
I was trying to be nice to her because she lost her father recently, and I think she just got too attached. She became fixated on me.
I didn't doubt him. It's exactly the sort of thing that could happen to a troubled teenage girl. I'm just saying, I murmur to Nate, the girl is troubled. She recently lost her father, and she will cling on to anyone who gets too close to her.
So basically we should keep her isolated.
That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm forced to pause my rant while our waitress interrupts to bring us our water glasses. Our waitress is young and attractive, like all the waitresses here. She spends what feels like half an hour telling us about the specials, and every time Nate asks a question, she lays her hand on his shoulder. I have to say, I'm getting sick of women hitting on my husband right in front of my face. I'm just saying, I continue after the waitress has finally left us alone again. The girl needs friends her own age, not a teacher who is pushing 40. Just be careful. Noted, Nate says through his teeth. But I can see on his face that his mood has soured. I don't know what he's so upset about, though. I'm just trying my best to protect him from ending up like Art Tuttle.
Chapter 25. Addie. After Mr. Bennett comes into Piazza, it's basically all I can think about. Like, there could be a little Nas X concert happening in the corner of the room, and I would not even notice. That's how distracted I am. And my mom is getting annoyed because she keeps trying to talk to me, and I keep saying, "What?" "Addie," she snaps at me. "What?" I say again. She lets out a long sigh. "You've hardly eaten any of your food." I look down at the plate in front of me. I got a tomato and pesto flatbread, though it's not very good. Usually, though, I would have scarfed it down by now. Instead, I have eaten only a teeny tiny slice of it. "I'm not hungry," I finally say. "Mr. Bennett ordered some sort of ravioli. I can't tell what it is from here, and it's not like I could go over there and ask. I'm curious what it is, though. Is it plain cheese ravioli, or is it the one with mushrooms? Does Mr. Bennett like mushrooms? Or does he think it's weird that people eat fungus the same way I do?" I'm trying not to call attention to the fact that I've been staring at him through the entire meal ever since he walked in. But it's hard not to. I mean, he's handsome enough that I'm sure I'm not the only person looking at him in this place. The waitress is definitely flirting. At one point, she had her hand on his shoulder, and I thought he looked annoyed,
but I wasn't sure. I was glad that he wasn't charmed by the boobalicious waitress. The other thing I can't help but notice is he's not having much fun with Mrs. Bennett. She's not my favorite person, if only because math is my weakest subject and she doesn't make it easy. But I assumed he likes her. I mean, he's married to her. Plus, she looks irritatingly pretty tonight, with smoky makeup lining her big eyes and a red dress that emphasizes her cute, trim figure. So I would think he must like her. But they have been sitting together for at least 20 minutes now, and they have barely said two words to one another. If Mr. Bennett and I were having dinner together, we would have a lot to talk about. I would bring a book of poetry, maybe Poe, and I would just love to hear his thoughts on each of them. Even though that's what we do in class every day, I would never get sick of it. Not in a million billion years. Doesn't Mrs. Bennett realize how incredible her husband is? When all my clothes got soaked today, she made me sit through her lesson and even repeat my homework. It was like she didn't care. Or worse, she thought I deserved to suffer. He was the only one who noticed how uncomfortable I was and sent me home. She doesn't appreciate being married to someone who is so kind and considerate, because she's the opposite. Well, if that's all you're going to eat, Mom says, I may as well get the check. I don't want to leave the restaurant. While I'm sitting here, it's almost like I'm having dinner with Mr. Bennett, even though that's kind of dumb because he is across the entire dining room and he doesn't even know that I'm here. We are about as far from having dinner together as possible, yet I still don't want to leave. Wait, I say, let me go to the bathroom first, then I'll eat some more. My mother looks skeptical, but what is she supposed to say? I can't use the bathroom. So I follow the signs to the hidden hallway that contains the bathroom. Naturally, there's a line for the single women's bathroom, but that's fine because it will just make it take longer, especially since I don't actually need to go at all.
Addie?
A familiar voice startles me while I'm scrolling on my phone. I'm totally surprised to see Mr. Bennett standing behind me. I guess he needed the bathroom, too. I knew we were on the same wavelength. Hey, I say awkwardly. Since our last encounter, I have showered and am wearing a clean pair of blue jeans. I even put on a nice pink dress shirt that my mom says complements my skin tone, although I am skeptical.
I saw you in the restaurant, he says. That's your mother, right?
A little thrill goes through me at the idea that Mr. Bennett noticed me, even in the crowded dining room. Uh-huh. I wonder if it's okay to be talking to him in this isolated area. If someone saw us here together, they might get the wrong idea. The last thing I want would be for Mr. Bennett to end up like Mr. Tuttle. He cocks his head to the side.
Are you okay? You looked like you were having a pretty bad day earlier.
That is a massive understatement, but honestly, I don't want to complain about Kenzie and her friends right now. I don't want him to think of me as some loser who is getting bullied by the popular kids. Sort of.
What happened?
It wasn't a big deal. I try to laugh, to show how not upset I am about what happened, even though it's phony. Some kids in gym threw my clothes in the shower, so everything got soaked. Mr. Bennett winces.
Jesus, that's awful. Who did that to you?
I shake my head. I don't know.
You can tell me.
When I don't say anything, he raises his eyebrow.
I can keep it between us.
I really can't tell him, even though I like the idea of me and Mr. Bennett sharing a secret. No matter what he says, he's still a teacher, and he might talk to Kenzie if I tell him about it. And if I rat her out, she's going to be worse. The last thing I want is for Kenzie to hate me more. I'm better off taking her abuse. I don't know, I repeat. His brown eyes hold mine for a moment, and a little thrill goes through me. I'm not sure why, though. Maybe it just feels nice to have a teacher on my side again. Or anyone on my side again. After the whole thing with Mr. Tuttle, it feels like everyone hates me.
I'll tell you what, he says. The rest of the class has another homework assignment today, analyzing a poem we talked about in class. But I have a special homework that I want you to do tonight.
If Mrs. Bennett, or really any other teacher, said that to me, I would have been horrified. But right now, I'm intrigued. Okay.
I want you to write an angry letter to the person who took your clothes, he says.
I start to protest, but then he adds, not a poem, but a letter.
You don't have to use their name, but I want you to get out that anger. Let your anger out on the page for me. Tell me what you want to do to this person.
What I want to do? He bobs his head.
Exactly. Write a revenge letter. Tell me what you would do if you had 5 minutes alone with this person and nobody would ever know.
He has no idea I've got Kenzie's house keys in my backpack. I imagine what would have happened if I had snuck into her bedroom and waited for her in the closet. I might have actually had 5 minutes alone with her. And let me tell you, those 5 minutes would have involved some serious payback. A smile twitches at my lips. Okay. I can already imagine what I'm going to write. You have everything in the world, and you are in a relationship with the greatest guy I've ever known. But you don't deserve any of that. What you deserve is to get your eye scratched out. No, that's too good for you.
Anyway, he says, it looks like you're having a nice meal with your mother.
Yeah, I rub at the back of my elbow. And, you know, I hope you're having a nice night with Mrs. Bennett. For a moment, his eyes cloud over.
It's her birthday.
I'm not sure what that means exactly. Oh.
So, yeah.
He lifts his shoulders.
It's fine. The food here is good.
Oh, boy. I was right. Mr. Bennett isn't having a good time with his wife. My impression of her in class is more accurate than I thought. She is not someone who goes home and then immediately becomes this super nice person who is totally different from the way she is at work. She's a legit awful person. Mr. Bennett doesn't like being married to her any more than I like having her as a teacher. That's why instead of using the empty men's room and hurrying back to his table to be with her, he has been standing out in the hallway talking to me for the last 5 minutes. At that moment, the person who was in front of me leaves the ladies' room, and now it's my turn. But I would much rather stand out here and talk to Mr. Bennett. Maybe I can let the person behind me skip ahead. But before I can propose the idea, Mr. Bennett smiles at me.
I don't want to keep you, Addie. I'll see you in class tomorrow. And don't forget that letter.
I feel a twinge of regret as Mr. Bennett disappears into the men's room. It occurs to me that as angry as I am at Kenzie, I'm even angrier at Mrs. Bennett for making him so unhappy.
Chapter 26
Eve. Nate seemed even more distracted than usual during the meal, and then subsequently on the drive home. And as soon as we walk in through the door to the garage, he lets out an exaggerated yawn.
Oh, man, he says. I'm beat, Eve.